Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, April 17th. I'm Ray Graff. All right, gardeners, 3, 2, 1, call. It's the gardening show. We welcome back Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. If you have a question, call us, 800-348-2551. Even though they're here every 2 weeks in the warm weather, these shows get jammed. Call now, 800-348-2551, or email voxpop at wamc.org. It's Fred, Bob, Dale Isla, and Greg. They're here to answer your gardening questions. We kick it off after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Yep, it's gardening today, and on the show, we welcome back Dale Isla Riggs, owner and operator of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York, Greg Ward, who is an owner of Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Mass., Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, home of a witch. Bob Graves is a co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. If you have a gardening question, you better call now. The lines are already loading up. 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. And if you don't make it through the show today, don't get upset and yell at our front desk receptionist. We're going to do it again every 2 weeks in the warm weather months. Hello, gardening people. How are we?
Hey, good. Thanks for having us, right?
Yeah, really good. Yeah. The weather is looking fantastic.
Isn't the sky?
Except for tonight.
What do you mean?
I think we should take note of the forecast he just read.
What's the forecast?
Frost.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Well, it's the middle of April.
It's the middle of April. It's expected. But next week looks really warm.
Yeah, most anything that you've planted will be fine with the frost. Maybe you don't put out the fresh, you know, spinach.
People come in looking for tomatoes now. It's a little early.
That's right.
I made a quick list. Can I just run through it quick?
And
I'm going to go backwards. You could plant cold weather crops now.
Okay.
So, you know, spinach, any of the crucifer things, right?
What's a crucifer?
Cabbage family.
Broccoli,
cabbage. I wouldn't do cauliflower yet.
Yeah, probably not.
No?
But onions, you can throw all the onions out there. You know, you should have planted your garlic right in the fall, but if you have some, you could plant it now.
Okay.
And then, I'll 2 seconds.
Sure, no, go, man, go.
And then, so planting is something you can really be doing. You know, the pansies, violas, those things are really best planted now because by the time you get to the end of May, it's getting too warm to plant them. They'll certainly bloom continuously through the rest of the spring, but really get them in now.
Okay.
But then I also made up, still pruning, right?
Sure.
Still, lots of pruning to do.
Yep, definitely is.
And then I just mentioned that there is some winter burn, both winter burns and actual desiccation maybe from the drought in the fall happening on evergreens. So I figure we'll probably get some calls.
Yep. Okay.
It's also a really good time to focus on fertilization of plants. So if you haven't got fertilizer down yet, this is a great time. It's a great time. The roots are really they're starting to wake up. Things are starting to bud out, but you really want to drop the fertilizer down before the shoot growth occurs. So great time for that as well. And still like you said, there's time for pruning here too, depending on what you're after.
Like this time of year, you feel like you can get everything done. Right?
Yep.
You haven't had to
Speak
mow the
for
lawn
yourself,
yet.
Man.
I was going to say, I never feel like I can get everything done.
It seems more manageable. I get it because you haven't started that constant lawn mowing, spring trimming.
I'm just saying, then the leaves pop and then you start to panic. I think it's the claustrophobia of the leaves coming out.
It's the weeds. It's the weeds that come later that take your time.
Speaking of lawn mowing, I saw a commercial, and you know, I'm kind of a Luddite. I like the old school technology, but this I have to look into.
The robot.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It's this automated robot. It must do it from satellite GPS. and it just does your whole lawn.
Yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah.
I want that so bad.
I've seen those
at some of the hotels and such in Europe, especially. You see all these little robot lawnmowers going around.
And at some of the trade shows, it's common at the trade shows right now. That's like one of the new technologies. Check out the robo-mower.
But not to put a damper on that, but, you know, No Mow May is coming.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Okay.
Just figured I'd mention
that. Yeah, well, I have No Mow May, June, and July.
I'm with you on that.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's the gardening show today on Vox Pop with Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves. Okay, now, Laura wrote me an email that included several pictures. She didn't get on last time, and it was about Rose of Sharon and a problem. Now, I see on line one, there's a Laura with a Rose of Sharon problem. So I think she's double dipping here. I'm going to take a risk, and we're going to go to the phones here. And if it's not the same Laura, I'm going to be very surprised. Laura, is this the same one who emailed me a little while ago?
It most certainly is.
You're on the show. Hello. Go ahead.
Yay! Yes, the groundhog has been very aggressive with my... Roses of Sharon.
I'm sending the pictures around to the whole crew here. So they're all going to take a look while you talk. So go ahead.
Yeah. So the bigger one with the big hole in it is doesn't have as much damage to the larger stems as the smaller one. I think, you know, it almost looks like a beaver got it. But anyway, the smaller one. So I'm just wondering about how I, in particular, the smaller one, how should I try to help it?
Okay, so explain what we're seeing here.
Yeah, we
somebody
see a
who
hole
knows.
Next to the stem, you know, the trunk of one of them, for sure, in the close-up. So you have more than one hole?
No, just the one hole, and the rest of that, Rose of Sharon, is in pretty good shape. I can tell you which picture.
I guess, and then the next question is, you said groundhog. And we all think, when also called woodchuck, the big thing, big rodent.
Or it's fairly big.
Yeah,
fairly big.
You can see it from 50 feet away.
Yeah. So it's, So it's not actually chewing the plant at all, right? It's just a hole that's the issue, the tunneling, correct?
No. The first photo shows where it damaged. Like, you can see on the left side of the one major limb, it's pretty chewed, and then it chewed the whole base off. The second photo is the hole of the one next door.
Oh boy.
To the broken one. The third photo shows the hole, and the fourth is the one that it chewed the stem, you know, the major trunk thing off of.
Okay, so it is
just a different
chewing
view.
Yeah, you have a beaver problem for sure.
There's nothing can do to fix that. You got to wait and see how much damage occurred. You may be able to keep the animal from doing any more damage by putting a fence around it or spraying some repellent.
What is the animal, though?
It's a woodchuck.
Oh, it is a woodchuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen him climb right up plants and chew them from the top.
They can climb trees.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that they can climb trees.
It's usually rabbits or deer, but chucks can do it.
How do you eradicate these vermin?
You know, usually I have a hard trap, and, you know, that's usually, you know, probably your best bet.
What are you going to do with it, though? You can't move it, though.
You'd probably have to hire someone.
I'm not worried so much about the animal as what to do to help the plant, like trimming it.
So
how to trim it?
Anything that's been chewed off, you would just make a clean cut at wherever it was attached. You would just make a clean cut there. The hole, that whole area, you would want to fill in. You don't want to have all the root system sort of exposed.
Yep.
So adding that soil back in, maybe adding some water to sort of settle it in and add some more soil, and then definitely putting some kind of metal fencing around these plants to keep it from happening again.
Okay.
Yeah, fencing is going to be your best bet, but the problem is that they want to dig under it. So if you do install fencing, you're going to want to install that fencing. You actually want to dig down and install that fence probably close to a foot deep.
Wow.
Because they're going to want to go under it.
How about giving them something else to eat?
Well, pretty soon they're going to have something else to eat anyway. They're probably not going to bother it.
Yeah, wood is usually not their favorite.
It's not.
They're grazers. They're going to go out in the
field.
They
like soft, the grasses, the clover, your vegetables.
Yep. And my mom actually would do just what you said. She would offer them alternatives to her various perennials and annuals that she planted. And it actually ironically worked for her. She'd get like, you know, reduced price carrots they were going to get rid of, and they love carrots. And she would just use melons. They really like cantaloupe, you know. So if you do offer them something else, it has worked for her. It's not something that I can say I've had great results with.
Okay.
But it's worked for mom.
I would also make sure that you fill in that hole quite well, because what happens is the woodchucks, the next generation will eventually get kicked out of the den and they'll go looking for their own den.
True.
So you don't want to make it easy for them to find a den.
All right, Laura, thanks for the call. It's Gardening Today with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. And by the way, a quick shout out to the folks from the Hortus Arboretum and Botanical Garden in Stone Ridge, who I found out today are big listeners to this show.
Great.
So a hidey, hidey ho to you. All right, a couple more. We'll do one more email, then we'll take a break, and then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Another email came in from Dawn. And Dawn says, the viburnum is a mature plant, about 12 years old, suffered from the drought last year with a lot of dieback, which I pruned out last month. Lost about a third of the plant with a large hole in the middle, and wonder if you think it has a chance to come back. It is a dwarf cultivar about 6 feet by 6 feet with such a wonderful twisted-looking trunk that I really would like it to live. I could see that it will leaf out and only remove the dead branches, but due to its wandering growth pattern, it is pretty sad looking. And that's from Dawn.
Yeah, well, the good news is you can usually retrain things as long as it's alive. And it sounds like it is. It sounds like it's going to bud out. And then with some careful pruning, you could definitely reshape that. So it sounds like they would get
They're pretty vigorous.
They're pretty tough.
Back. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're really worried about it, you could prune out a little bit more.
They also, you know, if the stems that you really like are dead, they will regenerate from the base, new stems. You know, it will take some time.
Depends a little bit on what type of viburnum it is, but they're all pretty tough.
Yep, and this time of year, again, is right now prime time to put down a little fertilizer. So if you're looking to promote a little more growth, that would be a good time to drop some down. I use a general purpose balanced fertilizer that's organic, and you know, anything like that, granular.
If it was drought damage last year, to make sure that it's hydrated this year, because if it's damaged 2 years in a row, then it really could start to deteriorate.
Okay. Then it could. Yep.
You don't want to water it.
So watering it later in the season.
Yeah. Right now you've got moisture. And when we say water it, we mean like a thorough watering, like maybe once a week during drought times, not light watering more frequently, but less frequent once a week. And then thorough saturation. When I say thorough, I mean it needs to penetrate down to where the roots are. We want to see the water sort of percolate down into that soil to at least a foot. 15 inches deep.
All right, let's take a break. It's Gardening Today. Fred Breglia, just heard him talking. Bob Graves and Dale Isla Riggs and Greg Ward as well. We'll be back at 800-348-2551.
Comes from California Closets.
That's interesting. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Oh, boy, the fun we have. That's Government Mule with John Scofield doing a Wayne Shorter classic, Tom Thumb. And now let's get back to the gardening show here. And I tell you what, let's go to Florida, New York, and we'll go to Victor. Victor, hello, Victor.
Yeah, Florida, Massachusetts it is.
Oh, I'm sorry, Florida, Massachusetts. Come on. Come on, you're on.
All right. All right. I got a couple of peach trees last year, put them in the ground a little later in the spring than this. And I want to know especially what type of fertilizer I should use. And one of them appears like it's probably going to have about 2 buds on it, and the rest of it looks dead, and the other one looks beautiful. So I was wondering, you know, about the almost dead-looking one.
Yeah, so in terms of fertilizer, a lot of the stuff I use is something called Plant Tone, It's an organic fertilizer. It's granular. You can, you know, just read the label. You broadcast it around, or you know, the root system. I like to go out beyond the drip line when I do it, not right next to the trunk.
They're not particularly fussy. Any organic tree food would probably work for a peach tree.
And then on the one that looks dead, it might not be a bad idea to just do a little scratch on the tips of any of the limbs you think are dead, and just see if under the bark that it comes off and that it's a little green, or is it dry and hard to get off and there's no green. That's when you'll know they're dead. Because the buds you're looking at, if you just see two, they could just be flower buds. They might, you know, they're a little bigger right now. Yeah. They're ahead of the leaf buds in terms of size and when they're going to open.
In general, with plants now too, where they come through the winter, if they've had some damage, there's nothing you're going to do about that now. Yep. You pretty much have to wait and see how they leaf out. You got no problem waiting at this point to see.
And it's quite possible as a peach tree that it might sucker right from the trunk again somewhere, wherever the green shows up. Maybe, you know, it possibly lower than the actual head that you have now. And it can actually kind of redevelop even in 1 year pretty strongly.
You can, yeah. When in doubt, let it leaf out, because it'll, you know, sometimes they look like they're dead and they're not. And sometimes the buds will actually get damaged. And, you know, peaches and cherries do that. And but then actually it has enough stored energy when they'll reform buds and reform, you know, some new growth. So even if, you know, the buds are dead, if the branches are still alive and green, you've got a chance. And if you got some live branches on there and you get some new sprouts, you can easily retrain a new canopy with some pruning.
Yeah, and remember, you know, we had some really cold weather this winter. Peaches don't tend to like 20 below zero, and I can believe that you probably got to 20 below in Florida. So, give it time. Like Greg said, just kind of scrape away some of the bark. And if it sprouts from the very bottom, do you know if the trees were grafted or not?
Almost guaranteed they would be.
Okay.
Yeah, they were grafted. Yeah.
Okay. So if it comes from the very bottom, right near the ground, that's your grafted variety that's resprouting, not the variety itself.
Yeah, and those you would want to remove. Yeah. So if it sprouts from the canopy, that's going to be the variety that you've got and you want, and those you're going to want to leave on. I would not take off too many sprouts. Sometimes, like, people get into taking all the water sprouts off, but if you have a little bit of damage, sometimes those water sprouts end up becoming the new branches. So those you're going to want to leave on. But anything from the base, like Delilah said, it's not the same plant, so those you can remove right away. And you'll see them a lot of times happen in the springtime. Just keep an eye on it.
Victor, thanks for the call. Let's go to Cornwall, and it's Chris. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, Ray. Love Vox Pop.
Thank you.
I have a question about daffodils. And about 3 years ago, I planted about 150 or so bulbs. And the first couple of years, I had about an 80-90% success rate. And this year, it's less than half. And half of those are green but don't have any flowers on them. And I wonder if your guests had any ideas about that.
I wonder if something's eating them.
Also, if you have 150, if they're in the lawn and you're mowing them before the leaves turn yellow, you're diminishing the energy that gets stored back in the bulb, and therefore it can't set a flower bud, doesn't have enough energy. So with daffodils, it's always best to just let them. It's not always convenient, but let them finish off. And, you know, sometimes it'll be early June before the foliage is discolored, but once it is, then you can cut it back. So if you cut it back significantly sooner, then you run into
they're pretty tough. They take care of themselves most of the time.
Yeah, these are down in a field below our house. It's not lawn. It's just, you know, what our soil is down here in the lower Hudson Valley, which is mostly rocks with a little dirt mixed in, and so I don't do anything to them. I just let them go back to the soil.
Okay, so you didn't cut them back.
All right. Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I would say is if it's very wet, that could sort of do some of them in. They like a normal sort of well-drained soil, so that could have knocked out a few. You know, we've talked about fertilizing recently, and so they wouldn't mind all being fertilized right now. That would certainly help, even the ones that are just green. With no flower bud, they all would improve with that.
It may be if they're in a rocky area, it may not be very fertile, so it has to feed that bulb every year.
It might just be struggling.
Yeah.
I also wonder if that long drought last fall in a rocky area might have weakened them a little bit.
Sounds like it could be poor ground.
Yeah.
Chris, thank you very much for the call. It's Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch. By the way, are you open?
We are. The store is not open, but we are transplanting and pruning and seeding away. And we will have, we'll be at the Troy Farmers Market in May.
That's very exciting. So good for you. So no more of the leisure season for Dale Isla Riggs for a while.
No,
yeah?
Unfortunately.
Okay. Working stiff like the rest of us
That's
for part
right.
of the year. Good for you. All right. 800-348-2551. Bob Graves is here. How are things at Fadigan's?
It's fantastic. We've got in a whole lot of stuff. It's going to get warm tomorrow. And what happens in our business is, you know, it's cold today, not too many people. And tomorrow it gets warm and all of a sudden there's a lot of people.
It's going to be cold again Saturday.
It gets busy really quick.
Yeah, there you go. Greg Ward, how are things at Ward's Nursery?
Yeah. It's really, you know, as we've been talking, there's really lots of things to do. And so I'm just doing as many things as I can at Ward's Nursery. I'm doing a little pruning. We're doing a little transplanting. We're, you know, just trying to get all the fun, colorful things out front.
Now, I'm guessing you and Bob at your respective nurseries, you're just barking orders all day, right? You're not actually doing anything. Am I right?
This morning, I walked about 150 yards three times with 2 5-gallon buckets of water.
What? You have people for that?
I do, but I didn't bring them.
Basically, you do whatever needs to be done, whenever it needs to be done.
All right.
Pretty much.
If that includes fixing the toilet, that's what you do that too.
Oh, come on.
And at this time of year, on a sunny day, there's a lot of time spent watering.
Watering. I watered this morning.
Yeah, I watered this morning.
You're great examples for us all.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we have a lot of stuff in our greenhouse right now growing, getting ready for the plant sale coming up in May, and it's watering time. It's amazing.
I was getting to you. Fred, how are things at the Landis Arboretum?
They're growing, literally. We're doing really good. We're doing a lot of stuff in the greenhouse right now, getting ready for the spring sale. It's coming up in about a month.
Yeah.
Hard to believe. And so we have a lot of stuff in there, and it's rooted in. And once they root in, you guys know better than I do. It's constant water. So and then we're in that stage right now and dealing with a lot of dead wood on a lot of our mature specimens, just dropping dead wood out and cleaning our getting our mature trees looking better. And so a lot of cleanup, starting to get some of that winter protection away for the
plants.
I'll bet
you with all this wind, you're picking up a lot of sticks.
There's a lot of sticks. Yeah, and we've been pruning and climbing trees and taking a lot of dead wood out, so we got a real lot of sticks.
There's a lot of sticks.
Well, it's the gardening show. Let's go back to our phones at 800-348-2551 down to lovely Hyde Park, New York. It's Dwayne's turn. Dwayne, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a silver maple. Quite large, and it's probably three times the height of my house. And about 20 years ago, it lost a significant limb and left a hole in the trunk. Is there anything I should do to doctor that up or just leave it go?
Yeah, so that's a good question. No spackle
All
on
right.
that one. No,
okay.
A lot of people over the years have done a lot of things with these, what we call cavities, and everything from filling them with concrete to I've seen people spray foam them. People try to, create some kind of barrier and put tar or some kind of sealers. And it's all been proven through research to not actually help the tree. So what you want to do with those is pretty much not much. The tree itself will compartmentalize and it'll deal with that cavity. It's kind of part of, part of its process. It's built in for
thing
it.
The to keep in mind with that silver maple is it's a weak tree.
It can be.
If it looks like it's anywhere where it's going to be danger or a hazard, you may want to trim it out or take it down or have something done to it.
I had a bunch of them.
I just took them all down.
Yeah, sometimes cabling can save it. It may be a good case, though, where you would get a certified arborist in there to look at it.
Yeah.
Just because, it did lose something. And then if it has a cavity, depending on where that is, it's not making that section stronger. It's theoretically, getting weaker as that cavity and years of rot start to add up. So a lot of times you can keep a tree up and safe by just putting cables in it and sometimes reducing the height a little bit as well. So if you think of these leads or their main branches as kind of like levers, the shorter the lever, the harder it is for it to have leverage and pull apart or break apart. So again, this would, you know, be something that you would want to maybe get looked at, especially since, hey, it's a big tree.
Yeah.
You don't want to lose it. It is near your house. And cabling and a little bit of reduction pruning a lot of times can keep that tree safe and alive for a lot more years. So that would be my recommendation. But in terms of the hole, there's not much you're going to want to do with the hole itself.
Well, one of the things about the hole is it's a great place for owls or flying squirrels.
Flying squirrels?
I'm just saying.
Raccoons. Know, that, I mean, that's a wildlife tree.
Yeah, it's, but it really is about the balance of the tree. It was 20 years ago this happened, and so whatever has grown since then, is the tree still have a reasonable balance and able to hold up everything, or is it a little heavy on one side? Because that's probably...
It looks great.
Yeah.
Great. So that's, you know, so that when you say it looks great and it has some, like, what we call defects, those are great candidates to be cabled, because if it's, like, really bad health and it's not, then what are you putting money into? But if it's a healthy-looking tree, that's a perfect candidate to do a little bit of work on to keep it, you know, growing good and keep it safe. And, like I said, cabling and a little bit of reduction pruning could solve that.
With a big tree, keeping it up is a lot cheaper than taking it down.
Good point, Bob.
It's going to be really expensive to take that down.
Yep, yep. So not only do you lose your tree, but once it breaks, once you have a major, you know, split on the main trunk, then they become more of a hazard. So you want to try to proactively do that. And Bob, you know, hit it right on the head with that. It's a lot more costly to take a tree down and clean it up than to keep it up.
Silver maples are great too. They're the first tree to bloom, first native tree to bloom.
They're coming into bloom right now, in fact.
Yeah, they've
actually
been full bloom in the Berkshires for a while.
Yeah, we're starting to see it right now.
Lovely. So, all right, let's go to Skodak and Kurt. Kurt, you're on the Gardening Vox Pop. Hello.
Happy spring, everybody.
And also
same
with you.
Happy spring.
Hey, I've tried to turn over a new leaf this year and plant my peppers, eggplants, and tomatoes according to the seed pack instructions 8 weeks before the first frost. And I'm a little concerned. All my plants are setting flowers already. Is this going to create an issue?
So first of all, setting, you know, planting them 8 weeks before the last frost, or even 6 weeks would have been so early April. So it sounds like you're a little ahead of the game.
Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Too soon.
I was excited.
Yeah, everybody, especially with those crops, everybody gets very anxious to start getting some of those crops in. And it's not unusual to have people seed them too early. So what I would do is just keep up potting them into a larger pot and keep them under lights until it's actually warm enough to plant them outside. And, you know, what are they in, like... 1 inch, 2 inch. What size containers are they
now? Oh no! I have been doing that. I've been slowly incrementing the size of the pot.
Okay, so on the warmer days, you can put them outside so that they're getting more light. Although, don't put them on the south side. Just like us, they will get sunburned, so you have to do that a little gradually. But have them in a container that you can move in and out fairly easily, and then when it's warm enough, then they'll be ready to go, and you can just pop them in the ground.
A lot of those warm weather crops, you don't gain a lot by starting too early. Your tomatoes and squashes and eggplants and peppers. You know, peppers get hurt just by being cold, just when if you put them out too early. So you really you don't gain anything sometimes by being really early.
Yeah, we're actually just planting the first tomatoes in the ground in our heated greenhouse tomorrow, and they have ground heat underneath them.
It just bothers me to, you know, buy a pack of six tomato plants and really only need four of them, you know?
Yeah, just seed them later is all we're saying.
Yeah.
Seed later.
Right, yeah, of course.
Yeah, with those crops, some of the things like onions and, you know,
lettuce,
celery,
lettuce, kale,
leeks, all those things actually, you could have started the ready. And, you know,
and you could be planting a lot of those out today. You know, it's going to be a little... A little chilly tomorrow morning.
Cold weather crops.
Yeah.
Right. It's just those warm weather crops. People tend to jump a lot of times. And I'm guilty of it myself over the years. But it, just like what you guys said, you don't get a real lot of, you don't gain a real lot on it.
And in fact, you can hurt them.
Sometimes you can set yourself back a little bit.
Yeah. But if you're willing to put them out and bring them in, you know, after tomorrow morning, we have some pretty decent weather. There's definitely some 60s and 70s with lows in the 40s. And if they're somewhat protected, you probably could even leave them outside, like on a porch, or a covered porch or something, on those 40, mid 40s.
It'll be in the 20s.
Not anything below 45 or so.
I just built a hoop house.
Okay.
And I have 6 mil plastic on it, as well as I have in the storage room a shade cloth that I can use too.
Okay.
Yeah, so with a hoop house, you should probably be able to plant those in the ground in the hoop house around the 1st of May.
Okay.
Just as long as you have some way to cover them on some of the colder nights. But really, you want soil temperatures to be in the 55 to 60 degree range for those crops.
All right. One email, and we'll try to answer this one in about a minute or so, and then we'll take a break and then home stretch of the program. It's Vox Pop Gardening, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. JF writes in, 3 of my 6 wooden raised beds have deteriorated and need to be replaced. Are the replacements made from more durable materials like galvanized metal? Couldn't metal change the soil chemistry? And that's from JF.
People are using water troughs, you know, from the kind of the farm supply stores as raised beds, and it works out pretty well.
They're basically plastic, most of them. You can get galvanized.
Yeah. Plastic, I see a lot of galvanized.
I have seen galvanized ones too. Yeah. People seem to have pretty good results with them.
And I've seen people make raised beds out of metal roofing on the sides.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So the metal, so John's, JF's question was, you know, will the metal change the soil? And so there's not a lot of leaching of material from the metal?
I think it's about heat, you know. So with summertime, you know, that metal is heating up, whereas if it was wood, there's an insulation factor. So I think, you know, creating a hotter environment in the soil is probably the only potential drawback.
All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Gardening Today with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. We'll be back. Relaxing. Interstitial music from the Hazel TV show, I think. No, it's a theme from Picnic, if you're scoring at home, and no one is. The number is 800-348-2551. Gardening Today with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Lattery. Hazel was one of the worst TV shows ever made.
I remember that.
Remember that show?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. What brought that up? Well, it was the music, and now I'm sorry it played. Nick writes in, and it's a 9-paragraph manifesto, so I'm going to try to edit on the fly. Nick wrote in this morning, so I feel I owe it to him. I'm on an earth-shaping team. Last summer, my main client planted 7-foot-tall green giant arborvitae trees as a fence 6 feet apart in the middle of the lawn with full sun. They started out with cement hard root balls, which was very concerning to us and the tree guys, but we buried them with good soil around, steady water needed for weeks. They look surprisingly healthy this year and have clearly grown. The root ball is above the inner soil line, but that line is still 3 to 4 inches below ground level. It's like in and out below the ground. Should I clean out the leaves and such underneath? Maybe add more soil? Is mulch better?
So if he's saying that the root ball is sitting a little high, is that what we heard?
That's what I'm taking.
Necessarily bad, depending upon how high it is.
Generally not bad at all.
Yeah. He said the root ball is above the inner soil line, but that line is still 3 to 4 inches below ground level.
What is inner soil?
I have no idea,
that's
man.
That's the second part that gets me.
Yeah. So in general, though, I've never seen a tree or plant die from being planted too high. That I can say. I've seen countless plants decline because they're planted too deep. And if you had to fill it up with something, I would say, you know, mulch soil a little bit and then mulch on top so it doesn't erode away would probably solve it.
The question on removing whatever has fallen down there is one of the researchers actually that you were talking about with the cavities and the like said to me at a seminar one time, the best mulch for a plant is whatever falls off of that plant.
That's actually a lot of cases the case because that's what's happening in the forest.
That's right. what naturally happens. And if there are leaves around it and there's needles around it, that's fine.
Yep, so I generally don't pull that away either. And if you want a fresh mulch look, you just add a little mulch on top.
The only reason to take it out is looks. You're not doing it for the plant.
That's exactly.
Well, hey, any of you, I know that you remember Selma Kaplan, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Selma writes in. And because Selma is such a great person, I'm going to ask Selma's question right now. Let me read it first. I hope I can. Oh, okay. If you can ask the gardening folks about why our newly fertilized, much-loved, old rhododendron appears to be entirely dead, like kind of overnight.
We're seeing, I don't know about you, Greg, but we're seeing damage from rhododendrons over the winter.
It was part of my little list of things about this winter desiccation is occurring on broadleaf evergreens. Definitely rhododendrons, some green giants even, especially newly planted ones.
Yeah.
Juniper, boxwood.
Pieris japonica.
It's not every single one. It's just some. And so I think what we'll say is it's probably not dead. It just has scorched all of last year's leaves, and that the wood, the stems, and even the flower buds, and maybe hopefully the leaf buds as well, are all intact. So if you could ask her to look for the buds and see if there's little firm, pointy buds on the ends of all the stems.
We have that on ours, but a lot of the leaves now, not all of them, are like, there are brown sections. It almost looks like it has camouflage on it.
We call that winter burn.
It's been a lot of it this year.
Yeah.
And those, you know, if the leaf gets damaged enough, it's not going to come back, but it'll put out new leaves.
So the plant's what we've still said the last few weeks is wait.
Hurry up and wait.
See what happens.
You know,
it's not going to look better next week.
How can you tell the difference between the leaf buds and the plant buds?
The flower buds.
The flower
on a rhododendron, it's great. The flower buds are these giant things at the center, that on the tops of the ends of all the stems, and the leaf buds are sort of surrounding them, or they're tucked in a little leaf axle.
And they tend to be a little smaller or a little skinnier, not as prominent or fat.
Oh my gosh, I think we're going to get flowers
this year.
I'm excited. Oh, that's because last year, nothing.
If the flowers were damaged from the winter, you can just sort of give them a little squeeze. And if they're nice and firm,
they're
all set.
Yep.
So, all right, I'll squeeze the rhododendron later.
Yes.
We'll leave that
any
alone.
Any number of hilarious jokes. You know what? Let's just move on. Tim and Gilderland, you're on. Tim.
Hi there. So I have a typical suburban lawn, and I'm also an environmentalist. And so for the last few years, I've been doing nothing in terms of weed prevention and fertilizer. And I do love dandelions and clover and bees. But in order to keep marital peace, I need to start doing something to the lawn because we have two problems. We have grubs that came maybe August last year and birds that followed them to eat them. And then we also have doggy pea spots. And so I have told my spouse that I will take care of the lawn better this year. So I'm wondering what is the most environmentally friendly way to proceed?
Well, I would, for the dog spots, you want to use some gypsum, which will help to neutralize the salt. Chew it up a little bit, put a little gypsum on it, and reseed it.
Okay.
You know, one of the most environmentally appropriate ways to improve a lawn is to overseed it. Go through and chew it up, rake it, or get a machine to chew it up, and go through and overseed it, because a lot of the newer grass varieties are much more tolerant of disease, drought, and insects than the older varieties. Now, you can go ahead and fertilize it. That'll help. If you don't want to use, weed killers, you don't have to use weed killers.
Yeah.
But if you improve the quality of that soil and the quality of the grass seed, you'll end up getting a better lawn. And don't mow it short. Let it go three inches high.
So those areas that the grubs ate, that's kind of comes up as duff. And so there, you're going to want to loosen that soil. And actually, vigorously raking the entire area, and wherever it comes up, actually taking a heavier grading rake and loosening that soil before you spread the seed is going to be helpful. You could also add some compost. Now, this is a big job. You don't have to do it, but if you ordered a yard of compost from somebody who would deliver it and drop it in your driveway and get your shovel and wheelbarrow, you can sort of cast the compost over the lawn and then rake it in so it sort of falls into all the spaces. That will go a long way into improving the soil.
The other thing I would do is just pull a soil sample, find out if your pH is in a good range. You know, maybe you need a little bit of lime, or maybe it's a little too alkaline, and the better the soil pH, the better your lawn's going to do.
If it is a high traffic zone, you might even consider some aeration, because if it starts to get compacted, you're going to end up not doing the lawn. The grass is going to have a harder time growing and doing good.
Even the weeds are. Seed.
But all those things are going to be perfectly fine for the ecological aspect of this of this yard.
And if you were looking for fertilization of that, you can use like the organic plant food that we talked about for shrubs, a granular. It works really well on lawns too, and it's not like super high nitrogen, so whatever you put down for the lawn, all the plants are going to say, hey, thanks.
And the only organic really weed control for a lawn would be corn gluten, which is not terribly effective, but it's better than nothing if you wanted to do something.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs, and we'll go to Lenox, Massachusetts. It's Susan. Hello, Susan.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
I'm having trouble with gout weed, and I first noticed it last summer, or last spring, and I thought it was another plant that I had put in that area, but it turned out to be gout weed. So I got down my hands and knees and pulled it all out, and then planted some other things in that space. But now I see that it is not only regrown, but spread. Do you recommend putting anything like cardboard or one of those black plastic things over the space?
If you have time, here it is. It's April. You can do everything on your list when it's April, right? So this would be a really great time to get out there and with your cultivator, your spading fork, and loosen up the soil wherever it is and gently weed it out. If it's not that much, even if it's 10 by 10, you know, which is maybe a little bit, you can certainly, you know, get rid of as many pieces as you can. And then as you go through spring and summer, when those few that you miss sprout, get out there and do that. I mean, short of that, you're going to have it unless you can cover your entire space with some kind of mulching cardboard.
Yeah, and we have at the Arboretum, we've got that plant, and there's areas where you really can't cover it because it's too tight with other perennials, and that's hand weeding, just like, you know, what we had talked about. But there are some sections where, oh, you know, it's a big open patch, and I smother that in areas that I can get away with that. And if you put it down, like you said, black plastic, weed fabric, although it doesn't work great for, you know, not a great thing to use long term, it's a great thing to smother plants with. It lets air and water into the soil, and it smothers all the sunlight, so it kills them. And I use that, and then, you know, if you put it down now, by the time May comes around, anything under it, you know, by the end of May, it's done. So if you can smother some places, it'll just reduce the amount of maybe weeding.
All right, Susan, thanks for the call. You know, gout weed, who came up with the name? I mean,
there's another name. There's Bishop's weed. Okay. And then the genus, I forget the species, but the genus is Agapodium.
Yeah. I mean, gout weed. You don't name weeds after illness, like lumbago weed, cancer weed.
I think that's
weed.
Probably exactly why they did it.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it also came in as an ornamental. It used to be, there's a variegated variety that was commonly planted.
We used to sell it, right.
Yeah. It was commonly planted. The variegated one's quite nice. But the problem with the variegated one is it reverts back to the straight green one.
I don't think it would give you gout. I think it probably treated gout, Ray.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how do you know that? Are you just guessing?
I don't. I'm guessing, yeah.
All right, well, Greg, well, no guessing on the show. Let's go to Gina in Monterey. You're on.
Yeah, I had the joy of gardening for many years, and it's slowly dissipating.
Isn't that true with everything?
Unfortunately, to ticks ticks and Lyme disease and all the stuff you get from ticks. And I call every year hoping maybe there's some kind of a solution that would not kill or disintegrate other plants and make everything grow but get rid of the ticks. Any advice?
Uh-huh.
I hear guinea hens are really good.
Oh, you got a guinea hen? Yeah.
I'd say I've had two ticks in the last week.
Really?
Yeah, they're coming out profusely. Every year it's more and more. I've been on doxycycline twice in the last 5-6 years. And there's no joy anymore. There's fear.
The ticks are one of the worst. They really are one of the worst things we deal with, I think, as gardeners and outdoor, you know, folks. And,
you're outside, you're in the garden. It's the next thing you do when you're done gardening is you take off your clothes and take a shower.
Yeah.
I mean, every single time, don't miss the opportunity to do that.
Tight clothing, and there's some stuff you can spray on your clothing, too, that tends to repel
There are these, you know, pyrethrin products that you spray on your clothes, and they last for multiple washings. Yep. And so you could have a gardening suit, socks, pants, shirt. And you throw those on every time, and they're supposed to be very effective against ticks.
And that's actually what I do. I treat my pants that I use. I have two or three pairs of, like, these are my outdoor, you know, outfits, and I treat them with pyrethrin, and, you know, you just take them off right away.
At some kind of a hardware store?
Exactly. Comes in an aerosol can, and it's for treating your clothes, not for spraying on your body.
Okay. Correct. Yeah, it's not toxic to you once it's dried, but it is toxic when it's wet, and I always try to make sure you never breathe it in. I use rubber gloves when I do it.
Do it outside on a calm day.
Okay.
You know, always tuck those clothes in, you know, tuck the socks, tuck your pants into your socks, make sure you have that seal, and and try to check yourself afterwards right away. Get those clothes off. Don't bring them in.
Okay. Gina, I'm so sorry. You know, you can embrace the malaise, the old ennui. It'll probably just get worse.
Ray would just as soon we said, don't garden.
Just sit on the couch and watch the game.
The alternative is container gardening.
Container
gardening. Ticks go everywhere. I mean, once you put anything outside.
True.
Mowing the lawn.
They're profuse.
Mowing the lawn short, you know, keeping the weeds a little, you know, I know we say don't mow the lawn too short, but, you know, don't let it get too weedy because they like more brushy areas.
The areas around the gardening spots.
Right, around the gardening spots. Even at the Arboretum, we mow the trails lower than we normally would in the old days when ticks weren't too big of a problem. But now we mow them wider. We mow them a little lower. Okay. It just helps to keep those ticks, you know.
You know,
it's not a cure, but it's going to help reduce it.
You know, the thing is, and I do the Pets and Vet show once a month, and I have a cat, and these Seresto collars and the like, they work very well. Why can't they make them for humans?
We've always said the same thing.
You know?
Why not? Don't have a good answer.
It is similar to the clothes treatment. I mean, it's not exactly the same, I don't believe, but it's similar in that if you're treating your clothes and you use them, then that's what will happen.
You just wear Seresto undergarments, and then you're fine.
Immune.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's see. Do we have time for another one? Yes, I guess we do. Let's go to Johnstown. Chris, you're on very quickly.
Thanks, guys. I like growing cantaloupes and sugar baby watermelons in my garden.
Yeah.
I put down some ground cover and some straw on top. Is there anything that I can do to make the garden in that area more hot or humid or anything that would promote a better tasting fruit or just make it more southern?
So you don't want to make it more humid because cantaloupe and watermelons are susceptible to a lot of different diseases. And the more humidity there is, the more diseases. But what I do is we plant on black plastic and we have ground cloth in between, black ground cloth. So the entire area is covered and makes soil nice and warm. And then we put small wire hoops over the crop, and we grow them under row cover or insect netting.
Aha.
And that increases the temperature right around the plant itself.
There you are. All right, Chris, go ahead.
Does that come off at some point?
We just open up the ends when the flowers come out, and the bees would tend to, and other pollinators tend to go in the ends. Research at Cornell has shown that you don't actually need to physically remove it as long as the ends are open.
Just open those ends up.
All right, we are done here, people. Greg Ward, how do people find out about Ward's Nursery?
Well, Ward's Nursery is at 600 South Main Street in Great Barrington, and you could go online if you want at wardsnursery.com.
Dale Isla Riggs, the Berry Patch, which presumably will open soon.
The Berry Patch will probably open late May or so when we have tomato transplants.
Splendid.
TheBerryPatch.net.
Fred Breglia, the Landis Arboretum already.
Yeah, we're at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, and our website's landisarboretum.org.
And Bob Graves, Fatigan's Nursery.
We're on the Troy Schenectady Road, 1140 Troy Schenectady Road, 2.5 miles west of the Northway near the Airport Road.
You sound like such a radio guy when you do that. You know what? Thank you all for being here. We'll do it again in 2 weeks. So if you... if you're one of the many people who didn't get through, we will do it again. Couple last notes here. Janet liked the music, the theme from Picnic. And Kevin was annoyed by my comments about the TV show Hazel, which he liked very much as a kid. So thanks, Janet. Sorry, Kevin. And, well, apologies to everybody who has to listen to me every day. Support comes from Glen Eddy Senior Living at the Terrace at Glen Eddy Assisted Living off Consul Road in Niskayuna, a community of seniors who share similar interests and passions. Part of Eddy Senior Living, Eddy, E-D-D-Y, seniorliving.com. And the Albany Pine Bush Preserve presenting Lupin Fest, a month-long celebration in May featuring programs and interactive exhibits, guided walks, and the opportunity to become a community scientist. AlbanyLupinFest.org. I almost didn't make it, but we made it. We'll see you tomorrow.